the reason behind the colors that you fly. Love just one nation, and the whole world we divide. You won't say you're sorry, there is no other choice. God bless the people now who cannot raise their voice. We can chase down all our enemies.
Hello.
Bring them.
Hello.
Okay, I'll get you in a sec.
We can bomb the world with pieces, but we can't bomb it into peace. Whoa.
Melody. Yes, we're on the air though.
I'll be back.
Oh, okay.
Military madness. Smell of flesh and burning pain. So I sing out to the masses. Stand up if you're still sane. All of us gone crazy. I sing this one refrain. We can chase down all our enemies. Bring them to their knees. We can bomb the world to pieces. But we can't bomb it into peace. Whoa.
Listening to KHEN LPFM Radio 106.9, Salida, Colorado. We're streamed on, we're community supported radio, and we're streamed on the internet at khen.org. And if you would like to listen to tonight's program or any past programs of Truth Quest with Melody, they're available at www.givemesometruth.info. Our link from the khen.org website. And I'm Melody, and my co-host this evening is Professor Dr. Eric Carlstrom. He's a professor of geography from California State University, Stanislaus, with nearly 30 years teaching experience. His academic research is focused on using soils and landforms as a means of reconstructing climates and environmental conditions of the past. And before I get into our guests, I also wanted to state that support for Cahen and TruthQuest is brought to you by Apple Juice Tech, providing preventative maintenance to keep your Macs healthy for a long time. Apple Juice Tech provides service consulting, classes, one-on-one training, and remote support for secure connection to your Mac. Phone 719-966-7323 or email tech@applejuicetech.net. And the views expressed on this program are those of myself and or my guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Cahen staff, volunteers, or board of directors. And our special guests this evening are Lorraine Murray and Alfred Weber. And we've had them on a couple of times in the past, and we're having them back again because they've come up with quite a bit more new information for us. And Lorraine has worked as a scientist at the Lawrence Livermore Laboratories and has a B.S. in geology at the University of California at Davis and an M.A. in Near Eastern Studies from UC Berkeley and serves as an environmental commissioner for the city of Berkeley. And Alfred is a co-host of Monday Brown Bagger, an innovative public affairs talk show on Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM. And he's also an author, futurist, lawyer, member of the District Columbia Bar, peace advocate, environmental activist, space activist, and radio talk show host who has advanced degrees in both law, Yale Law School, and Counseling University of Texas. He's also a Fulbright Scholar, graduate of Yale University and Yale Law School, and the University of Texas Counseling Program, and has taught economics at Yale University and civil liberties at the University of Texas, and he's a general counsel of the New York City Environmental Protection Administration. And I guess, Eric, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, and would you like to get it started here, or do we want to go ahead and let...
I'd be glad to start it out. I have heard on your own website, Alfred, which I think would be great if you could tell people about, that you have done interviews with Lorraine Murray about the... earthquake in Haiti, and that this might be a candidate for a man-caused earthquake. And so I'd like to start it with that issue, and if you could tell us what the evidence, if you two of you could go into the evidence to support that idea, and then maybe we can take it from there and talk about other earthquakes which might have similarly been triggered. We perhaps are in an age of geoengineering, weather modification, and weather warfare, including perhaps man-induced earthquakes. So if we could start with that.
Sure. Well, you know, it's quite a coincidence, but Lorraine and I taped another program today, which will be broadcast on Vancouver Co-op Radio on Monday, March 22nd. So I think that incorporates the latest research and the perspective that in fact we have a para-governmental entity which is now using the tectonic plate mineral belt system in conjunction with HARP together with the nation state system to carry out a series of mineral land grabs and actual environmental warfare attacks, the latest of two examples are, as you mentioned, the Haiti earthquake of January 12, 2010, which over 300,000 people lost their lives. That's at least twice the number of people who died at Hiroshima. So it's clear that HAARP is a space-based weapon of mass destruction, followed by a February 27th, 2010 earthquake in Chile, in another plate tectonic system, but related system, in which 2 million people were left homeless. As Loren will get into in more detail, the resource grab, and this is all documented, was by a Rothschild controlled series of companies for gold and oil deposits in Haiti, which are enormous, in the trillions of dollars. And in Chile, most probably has to do with the petroleum deposits now beginning to be explored on the February 22nd, 2010, 5 days before the earthquake, underneath the Falkland Islands. Around that time, President Hugo Chavez of Venezuela had appealed to and successfully the Latin American leaders to back Argentina in its its bid against the UK to have Argentina have the mineral rights to the petroleum beneath the Falkland Islands, and the Chile earthquake, which may have been a blow across Latin America's bow, after which Secretary of State Hillary Clinton took a victory lap on March 1st down through the Cono Sur of Uruguay, Argentina, and Chile. So we have gunboat diplomacy and resource grabs are now elevated to a new level of technology that was formerly gunboats but is now an invisible level, which is HAARP, a space-based weapon of mass destruction that we call the invisible weapon because each of its components is invisible. It has a space-based component in the ionosphere, which is invisible, which can act as a scalar weapon, the electromagnetically directed ionosphere. Then it has an atmosphere-based component, which can act as a binary weapon against the human population, as well as an amplifier of the mind control properties of HAARP, and that's the chemtrail system, which is invisible because any legislator in any country or any mainstream media journalist that reports it loses their job or otherwise gets neutralized. And we have an invisible ground-based component, which are the HAARP ground-based components, which are disguised as research facilities. So that's the weapon system, and we have its application in a complex geopolitical with resource grab application led by a transnational war crimes network centered in the city of London. And I'd like to turn it over now to Loren, who will supply more of the scientific data and the mechanism by which all of this functions.
Yes. What I'd like to is, I'm sorry.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
Was somebody else going to talk?
No, huh?
Okay.
No, we're waiting.
Okay. I heard. I'd like to go back to the discovery of the New World. And where the basis of this, these land grabs and resource grabs started, and it gives a much better context to understand what is happening now. It's just the same thing on a much bigger scale. And I would like to read the words of Christopher Columbus, what he wrote in his ship's log in 1492, when after his ship had landed on Hispaniola, which is the island where Haiti and the Dominican Republic are. And what he had to say himself in his own words that exposed his scheme, that he had sold to Queen Isabella, because, he was really representing her, and, the greed for Spanish gold from the New World. Quote, they brought us barrels of cotton thread and parrots and other little things which it would be tedious to list, and exchanged everything for whatever we offered them. I kept my eyes open and tried to find out if there was any gold, and I saw that some of them had a little piece hanging from a hole in their nose. Why is that echoing?
I'm not quite sure, unless there's...
I'm hearing echo, too, and I think it's coming from Lorraine.
It's probably Skype.
Right, and that's part of the... we've done everything we can to kind of bump it up on this end, but every once in a while that seems to happen. So,
okay. So he said, I saw that some of them had a little piece hanging from a hole in their nose. I gathered from their signs that if one goes south or around the south side of the island, there is a king with great jars full of it, enormous amounts. I tried to persuade them to go there, but I saw that the idea was not to their liking. He's talking about the Arawak Indians, the Taino group found on the island of Hispaniola when they landed. He said they would make fine servants with 50 men. We could subjugate them all and make them do whatever we want. And so from the very first arrival in the New World, the Europeans were seeking gold. And their goal was actually to exterminate the indigenous population. Now, the Arawaks, there were 400,000 on Hispaniola, were completely exterminated within 20 years because they were used in mining the gold. They were exposed to disease they'd never had before, and they were used as slaves. So from the very beginning, the history of Hispaniola, which is Haiti and the Dominican Republic, has been as a target of plunder by European interests. And it's no different today. Colonialism ended in Haiti. The French succeeded in securing Haiti. The Spanish finally gave them a third of the island, which they had squatted on. And in 1804, 400,000 black slaves were able to fight the French and to win their independence. They were the first and the last black slave revolution that was successful and were able to form their own country. And in that war, 100,000 black slaves died, and 24,000 of the 40,000 French plantation owners were also killed. Now, since 1908, it's been known that petroleum deposits were on Haiti. And, of course, they've known the gold was there the whole time. The UN started doing geological exploration, economic geology, in Haiti in about 1972 or 73. And the UN is, of course, started by the Rockefellers, And the purpose of the UN is to serve the banking and international financier interests, as well as the ruling oligarchy. And so when we expect too much from the UN, we're going to be disappointed. So we need to remember what their purpose in being established was. And I found a geologic report published, peer-reviewed scientific paper that was published maybe about 4 or 5 years ago. And Canadian geologists funded by the Rockefellers, the City of London bankers, and other mining interests and investors had this exploration study funded where this geologist went to the Dominican Republic and actually investigated an ancient volcano, and he estimated the number of ounces of gold and silver and the tons of zinc and copper that could be mined from that one volcano, and the whole island is covered with them. And I calculated at today's metal prices what that one volcano is worth, and it's $54 million. No, I think it's $54 billion. Anyway, it's a heck of a lot of money. And when you realize there are many of them in the Dominican Republic and Haiti, You understand that there's trillions of dollars of metalliferous deposits, not to mention the oil and gas. That's a whole nother revenue stream. And so then I knew when I looked up who had funded the study and where the geologists were, Canada, I knew that this was the international financiers, and that the interests were centered in London. Now, I began to investigate if mineral rights had been sold in Haiti, and I discovered that the Eurasian Mining Company had bought 10% of the mineral rights of all of Haiti. That's an enormous amount. And so I wanted to know who the Eurasian Mining Company was, and I went to their homepage on their website, and I was shocked to discover their five biggest exploration and mining development projects were, number one, Haiti, number two, Northern Scandinavia, number three was Turkey, number four was Kyrgyzstan in Central Asia, and number five was the Southeast Asian Island Arc system, including Sumatra. So I said, this has got to be part of a really, really big project. And I began to realize that some of these mineral deposits were in areas where geologists would have a very difficult time doing exploration geology. And I said, well, they must have mapped a lot of this or discovered these deposits from satellites by using radio tomography. And with radio tomography, the satellites, which are part of the HAARP land-based, air-based, sea-based, space-based weapons system, They transmit a certain radio frequency subsurface into deep into the ground, and it's one frequency, but whatever minerals it interacts with changes the frequency, and each metal deposit or each metal has a particular wavelength that is transmitted back to the satellite. And I discovered that Bechtel had used radio tomography already from satellites all over the world. So this is absolutely an international mining and resource grab project, and it's extremely sophisticated, very well funded, and the international banking system, everybody's involved, the UN. So I, you know, after I found the Eurasian Mining Company site and then read about each of their projects, I realized, because I have a geoscience background, that they are mining huge, vast mineral belts that are very, very large structures that go through many countries. And I was just astounded. And how do these mineral deposits form? It's through plate tectonics, and the continents and the ocean floor are big plates of rigid material that are floating on the hot mantle, and they're moving around in a manner that creates mineral deposits where they collide. And there are very hot fluids, huge pressures and temperatures that concentrate certain metals and form certain minerals. And these are what these big international interests are after. There are three ways to create new wealth. One is mining, one is farming, and one is banking. And if you really have been paying attention today, I mean, in this time that we live in, you have an awareness that mining, banking, and agriculture are very, very large global projects now by transnational corporations, as well as stronger states that want to exploit weaker states in order to gain economic advantage.
Okay, now this is great and for big picture type stuff. But if we could go back and kind of work this thing from the other direction, which is, let's talk about the facts surrounding the Haiti earthquake that would lead one to speculate that HAARP, let's define HAARP and lead one to speculate that HAARP was involved in this thing. And then we'll work back towards the big conclusions that you've kind of started with. Now, I've got a quote here by Nicholas Begich, who wrote Angels Don't Play This HAARP. Says, HAARP is a super powerful radio wave beaming technology that lifts areas of the ionosphere by focusing a beam on them and then heating them. Electromagnetic waves then bounce back into the earth and penetrate everything, living and dead. And officially, the uses of HAARP, and this HAARP, of course, is an establishment in Alaska, an array of very large antennas, I think 180 or 360 of them, something like that. And the official uses, and paid for by the U.S. Air Force, amongst other private companies as well, official uses would include better communication with submarines and wide area earth-penetrating tomography, as you mentioned, very similar to radar that can be used to locate underground missile sites, bunkers, oil reserves, etc. But it also has potential for other uses based on kind of a technology we can call Tesla technology. It can jam global communication systems. It can change weather patterns over large areas. It can interfere with wildlife migration patterns. It can adversely affect human health. It can trigger floods, droughts, and hurricanes, and it can trigger earthquakes. The technologies available to create earthquakes by humans, and this technology has been around for quite a while. In fact, Tesla himself over 100 years ago talked about the ability. He said he had the ability in the late 1800s, 1890s. He said he could split the earth in two with the interfering wavelengths of different frequency, different electromagnetic radiation of different wavelengths, etc. So there is this widespread sense that there is technology out there controlled by the Air Force and the military, amongst other privatized corporations that can modify the weather, steer hurricanes, and create earthquakes. But now, what evidence do we have to suggest that the Haiti earthquakes might have been triggered in such a manner?
Well, we have some early experiments with HAARP and the development of HAARP. And one of them is, this is from Rosalie Bertel's book, Planet Earth, The Latest Weapon of War. And she said some early examples, just so we know that this has happened. One was July 28, 1976, the Tangshan earthquake in China, which left 650,000 people dead. It was preceded by an air glow. It's called noctilucent clouds or noctilucent light, but they call it air glow, said to have been caused by the Soviet ionospheric heater. Now, the Soviet Union and the United States co-developed HAARP, beginning with the Woodpecker project, and it was developed at the Livermore Lab, the U.S. facility with Livermore. And a lot of money and giant magnets and teams of scientists went back and forth. I'm a whistleblower at Livermore, and I was able to interview a physicist from MIT who worked on the Woodpecker antenna at Livermore, and he said, I always wondered why that was always so well-funded when it had no obvious benefit to the public. Well, I said, I'm going to tell you what they did with it, and he was horrified. Now, on September 23rd, 1977, the Washington Post reported a strange star-like ball of light sighted over Petrozavodsk. Now, that star-like ball of light and the Russians or Soviets were investigating Tesla technology. So there we have the first hint that the Tesla technology is involved.
If I could break in, I've done just a little research lately on the Tangshan earthquake of July 28, 1976 that you mentioned. It was a 7.8 on the Richter scale. It struck at 3:42 a.m. Lasted 14 to 16 seconds. There was a 7.1 aftershock in the afternoon. And although the city of Tangshan had over a million people, it was leveled. And as you say, over 650,000 people were killed. But there are some very strange phenomena that are associated with that, which would lead perhaps this author to associate it with the Soviet and American Tesla technology. In a nearby town, water levels rose and fell three times the day before the earthquake. Also, in one household just before the earthquake, a goldfish repeatedly jumped out of its bowl, and they would put it back in and it would jump out, as if it was being zapped with some kind of a microwave, which, of course, heats up water molecules. Just before the first tremor at 3:42, the sky lit up like daylight. Multi-red hued lights, mainly white and red, were seen up to 200 miles away. Leaves on many trees were burned to a crisp, and growing vegetables were scorched on one side as if by a fireball. The night before the earthquake, many reported seeing strange lights of many colors as well as hearing loud roaring sounds, louder than an airplane. Others saw fireballs traveling across the sky. So the Tangshan, and I believe that some people are referring to these lights as earthquake lights. Others refer to them as HAARP lights.
So that's excellent. That's the kind of fingerprint information that we're looking for to be able to identify or distinguish the HAARP-triggered earthquakes from natural ones. So to go back to September 23rd, 1977, the Washington Post reported the star-like ball of light that was sighted in Russia. A similar air glow effect was reported over the American Midwest on September 23rd, 1993, at a time of disastrous flooding. At the same time, a lightning flash rising from the tops of the clouds up into the atmosphere was reported. This was recognized as a new geophysical phenomenon. Normal lightning flows between two clouds or from clouds to Earth. So these are the kinds of changes that we're looking for. Another one was September 12th.
If you could stop for a second there, Lauren. You're talking about the 500-year flood of the Mississippi River in 1993?
Yes.
Okay, so that was a tremendous flood. That was an unprecedented flood, statistically off the chart. It's a 500-year flood. So you're suggesting that associated with that are what kind of phenomenon now?
Lightning flashes, air glow, and lightning flashing from the tops of clouds going up into the ionosphere or higher in the atmosphere, instead of lightning normally flows between two clouds or from clouds down to Earth. It hasn't been observed going straight up into the ionosphere.
So has some author, or do you know of somebody who has suggested that this flood was man caused, or was
she's saying from, well, first of all, she's a scientist. She was on many government science, independent scientific panels, and so she knows a lot about the development of Star Wars and National Missile Defense and all of that. That was actually the cover for Developing HAARP. And so she was there on these government panels for a long time, and the scientists who were on the panels were being presented the facts by the military with a plausible cover story. But the scientists started looking at each other and saying, well, God, if you could do that with it, yeah, that's what the military said it's for, but you could do this with it too. And then they started to be suspicious and understand the weaponization aspect. And they started looking for abnormalities. And so from earthquake event to earthquake event and flood to flood, they began to identify similar abnormalities or irregularities that we could say are characteristics of HAARP technology.
Now, have you heard of the earthquake in Turkey? It was August 17th, and I'm not sure of the year. I have a good description of that from a local source.
Oh, good. Let me just finish this, and then you can talk about those.
Okay.
September 12th, 1999, magnetometers at Coralitos, which is Monterey Bay where the Navy is, detected an unusual ultra-low-frequency waves between 0.01 hertz and 10 hertz. This is the lowest range of ELF waves, extra-low-frequency waves. These waves grew to about 30 times their first intensity and finally subsided on October 5th, 1989. On the 17th of October, 12 days later, they suddenly appeared again at 2 p.m. local time with signals so strong that they went off the scale. 3 hours later, the Loma Prieta earthquake in San Francisco took place. So the Loma Prieta earthquake was probably HAARP. And that is not the first time I've heard it. Then on the 29th of March, 1992, the Washington Times reported that satellites and ground sensors detected mysterious radio waves or related electrical and magnetic activity before major earthquakes in Southern California during 1986 to 7. That would have been the, that was the Northridge earthquake.
Northridge is 1994.
Oh, well, then it was another earthquake down there in Southern Cal. Then in Armenia in 1988, and Japan and Northern California in 1989. The January 17, 1994 earthquake in L.A. was also preceded by unusual radio waves and two sonic booms. These strange coincidences have never been completely explained. Then she talks about recent earthquakes that have been significantly different from the so-called typical earthquake. And normally earthquakes occur at 20 to 25 kilometers below sea level. However, the devastating earthquake in Bolivia on June 8, 1994 took place 600 kilometers below the surface. And Eric, I was in Nebraska doing a science camp, an NSF science camp for teenage girls, and I was in the elevator, and I could feel the earthquake waves in the elevator shaking the elevator from the Bolivian earthquake. And so I couldn't understand what caused that, because Nebraska is in a very stable part of the U.S. But we went on to class, and the woman seismologist, actually her area was Bolivia, and she said she had all the data coming in from the earthquake stations and from other scientists calling her. So she updated us like every 30 minutes, and some of those Bolivian earthquake seismic waves actually came up at nodes at the surface all over the world, and Nebraska was one of them.
Yeah, okay, you talked about the 1994 Northridge earthquake near L.A., and you talked about the one in 1995 in Kobe, Japan, which proved to be much more lethal and destructive. As also, I think, and now this is all coming from the book by the lady you're talking about, right? Could you repeat her name again and the book? Using the Earth as a Weapon?
I think we lost her there a second, so I'll go ahead and try to get her back up.
Okay.
Okay. Alfred, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay. All right, so I'll go ahead and try.
Yeah, I think that was Dr. Rosalie Bertel's book.
Yeah.
Planet Earth as a Weapon of War.
Yeah. That seems like a real good primary source for people to get who are interested in this topic. I'm looking for kind of written sources and video sources.
Yeah, you know, and also I would like to honor researcher and HAARP investigator Jerry E. Smith, who just passed away about a week ago from pancreatic cancer, who wrote a book called HAARP, The Ultimate Weapon of the Conspiracy.
Yeah.
And people should read that book as well. And also in Jerry's memory, he really investigated quite a bit in that particular book.
You guys, I'm going to go ahead and try to dial this second, and if I do drop you, I'll go ahead and bring you both, all of you back up. Okay. Okay, so it looks like it should be working okay, but you will hear it dialing.
Hello.
Okay, I guess you dropped.
No, they cut me off.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we were just talking about sources, Loren, and we mentioned Bertelli's book, Planet Earth as a Weapon of War. Then Alfred mentioned Jerry Smith's book about HAARP, and also mentioned the fact that he had just died of pancreatic cancer. And I was also going to add that the History Channel actually has a one-hour show on weather warfare, which features Jerry Smith and Nicholas Begich, and actually shows how HAARP technology can cause an earthquake. So it's in the public domain now in various outlets. So
there's another excellent source. It was actually the succession of scientists after the Manhattan Project, which never ended, during the Cold War, the Jason scientists were sort of the next generation of U.S. government and military scientists. They're the most elite scientists in the United States. And one of them, Gordon MacDonald, wrote in 1968 a chapter called How to Wreck the Environment. He was a geophysicist and seismologist part of the time he was at UCLA. And he actually developed and was involved with the tectonic warfare, development of tectonic warfare. So he was so disturbed, and other scientists were, about these horrific new weapons that were much, much more destructive, weapons of mass destruction, that they wrote a book, or each contributed a chapter in a book called Unless Peace Comes, A Scientific Forecast of New Weapons. And in this book, in his chapter, he described weather modification, tectonic warfare, and the development of technologies that would release huge amounts of energy that are part of or released in natural events, environmental events. And he said this is what they want to do. It's to use an equivalent nuclear weapons release from in the same way from an earthquake or a volcanic eruption or whatever storms. He compared them, the strength of different storms, to megatons of nuclear weapons, what the energy they release. And so they were thinking about this even in the 40s after World, right after World War II. So this has been a very, very long and extremely expensive path of development. And
let me just interject here, because I've also been reading a little bit on this, and Professor Gordon MacDonald, who wrote this article, How to Wreck the Environment, states in that article, the key to geophysical warfare is the identification of environmental instabilities to which the addition of a small amount of energy would release vastly greater amounts of energy. And in this article, Professor MacDonald describes techniques for weather manipulation, climate modification, polar ice cap melting or destabilization, ozone depletion techniques, earthquake engineering, ocean wave control, and brain wave manipulation using the planet's energy fields. He speculated that these types of weapons could be built and would be virtually undetectable by their victims. So, yeah, he was basically outlining the future of the HAARP project and some of the others, because we need to remember that HAARP is one of many ionospheric heaters that are located throughout the world. The HAARP facility in Alaska is only one of, I don't know, 10 or 20 that I've heard of.
Oh, no, they're all part of HAARP.
Yeah, okay.
This is a global international collaboration.
Yeah.
And
well, let me go ahead.
And let me just go on to finish off what he said. He said, as economic competition among many advanced nations heightens, it may be to a country's advantage to ensure a peaceful natural environment for itself and a disturbed environment for its competitors. Operations producing such conditions might be carried out covertly, since nature's great irregularity permits storms, floods, droughts, earthquakes, and tidal waves to be viewed as unusual but not unexpected. Such a secret war need never be declared or even known by the affected populations. It could go on for years with only the security forces involved being aware of it. The years of drought and storm would be attributed to unkindly nature, and only after a nation was thoroughly drained would an armed takeover be attempted. Is that Haiti, or is that Haiti?
Okay, well, let's go back to our trajectory here. We're talking about earthquakes since the Tangshan earthquake of 1976 that might be candidates for being man-induced by HAARP. I got this out of an article that I downloaded. It's about the Turkey earthquake of August 17th, and I'm afraid I don't know the year, but I think it's rather recent. And this is a kind of a eyewitness local report on what surrounded the earthquake. It said the lights are incredibly clear, circular or triangular in shape, white, yellow, red, and blue colored, remain visible in the sky for 5 to 20 minutes, following a materializing, dematerializing pattern. The funny thing is, it became a routine thing as they have been showing up two or three times a week. They became an inevitable component of the TV news and media. Furthermore, just before the quake, the bottom of the sea in Izmit went red, and the sea temperature went up 40 to 45 degrees centigrade. However, there are no underwater volcanoes in the Sea of Marmara. Starting 2 days before the quake, hundreds of fish, crabs, and other sea life forms died, and not naturally. Somehow they were burned. The fish nets of the fishermen were burned, and we have several rock and stone samples from the sea, which went black in color. Some fishermen also say that they witnessed an explosion under the sea. Fireballs, strange lights, sightings never ended in Turkey. So, never seen before in Turkey. So it would seem that there is a kind of a there are a series of strange phenomena that, that may surround earthquakes that are triggered by HARP. Would you agree? And have those same characteristics been observed in the Haiti earthquake?
Definitely trying to get that information. That was the Izmit Turkey earthquake in 1999.
Okay, now thank you, 1999, yeah.
Yeah, and it was in the Sea of Marmara, as you mentioned, in northwest Turkey. Now that is exactly where the mining, the big mining projects are going on. They are mining the entire northern third of Turkey along the coast of the Black Sea and inland from that. And that is part of the Tethys system. There used to be a giant inland sea from the Mediterranean all the way across Asia. And so I did see on the Internet a video clip that was on the Discover Channel that showed demonstrations of earthquake machines. It was Tesla technology. At the Los Alamos lab or the Nevada test site. It was in the desert and it was U.S. And then I saw photos of Tesla in his laboratory, and he had smaller apparatuses sitting around on his desks and everything, or tables in the lab, that looked exactly like the machine they were demonstrating at Los Alamos or Nevada test site. And the Discover Channel not only showed that, but it showed how a Turkish earthquake had been generated, and the waves were transmitted from somewhere else in the Mediterranean. Now, the HARP facility that the British have on Cyprus absolutely was used 2 years ago to engineer the huge storm in the Black Sea. And I had a Turkish naval officer living in my house, renting a room from me, and he came in the middle of the night and woke me up and said, come and look at the Turkish news. It was never on the news here, but they sunk, a bunch of oil tankers. They sunk a couple of boats full of sulfur, which when it gets mixes with water, it forms sulfuric acid. And they created a huge environmental disaster on all shorelines of the Black Sea, which will persist for at least 70 years. And so I started to look at why they would have targeted the Black Sea at that particular time. And there were also demonstrations and practices for about 9 months before that happened. People on yachts and boats and people living in Cyprus reported all these strange weather phenomena that had never happened before. And what I discovered is that this happened at a time when Putin had gone to European countries and negotiated 20-year contracts, for instance, with Italy to provide all their gas and oil for the next 20 years. And the European energy grid had been very disorganized. Putin went in and organized it for Russia. And so the U.S. and international oil companies were furious. And, I mean, they'd really been asleep at the wheel. And so to punish Putin, I think they did that horrible storm on the Black Sea.
Well, let me just kind of, Melody, were you going to say something?
Yeah, I just wanted to ask, is it typical to have large radiation releases on a regular quake or on any of these man-caused ones?
What do you mean radiation?
My understanding is when the one in Haiti took place that there was elevated radiation in the atmosphere.
Yeah, the atmosphere is ionized, and you have electromagnetic, what you said, ELFs, extremely low frequency waves are directed.
But is she talking about ionizing radiation or non-ionizing? Are you talking about radioactivity?
That's my understanding. That's my understanding, but I'll go back and double check now because I'm not
radioactive.
Okay.
But the powers involved are greater, in fact, sometimes than nuclear weapons. Let me just mention here a little bit about the Tesla effect.
Could I just make one comment to Melody?
Yeah.
They are utilizing ionizing radiation or radioactive particles in the ionosphere to with HARP. They're releasing tritium. Barium is not radioactive, but they are releasing tritium, thorium, other radioactive materials from satellites and from rockets into the atmosphere. They're part of chemtrails. They've been analyzed in chemtrail material. And so definitely ionizing radiation is a part of the HARP system.
Well, okay, if I could add to that, and I'm very interested in the chemtrail connection, and I hope we can get to that, but maybe people need to understand that the HARP ELFs are being bounced off the ionosphere, which is, first you have the troposphere, which goes up the first 10 miles in altitude, and then you have the stratosphere, and then you have the thermosphere. And part of that is the ionosphere, and the ionosphere is comprised of positively or negatively charged atoms. That's why they're ions. They tend to accumulate at the north and the south magnetic poles, which is why we have the aurora borealis and the aurora australis at the poles. And so this gives us the beautiful northern lights and southern lights. So the Earth is like a gigantic bar magnet. It has an electromagnetic field. Okay, now that's dated. Here's what the Specula magazine said in 1978, shortly after the Tianshan earthquake. It says electromagnetic signals of certain frequencies can be transmitted through the Earth to form standing waves in the Earth itself. In certain cases, coherence to the standing wave can be induced, wherein a fraction of the vast surging electromagnetic current of the Earth itself feeds into and augments the induced standing wave. In other words, quote, much more energy is now present in the standing wave than the amount being fed in from the Earth's surface, unquote. So by interferometer techniques, giant standing waves can be combined to produce a focused beam of very great energy. This can then be used to produce earthquakes induced at distant aiming points. Now, there's an engineer by the name of Colonel Tom Bearden who is an expert on these kinds of things, and he's written widely about this and talks a lot about the Soviet woodpecker technology and weather modification in the 80s. And he's quoted as saying about Tesla's magnifying transmitter, which is an invention of Tesla. Tesla found that he could set up standing waves in the Earth, the molten core, or just set it up through the rocks. The telluric activity in the rocks furnish activity into these waves, and one would get more potential energy in those waves than he put in. This is what McDonald said. He called the concept the Tesla magnifying transmitter. TMTs, or Tesla magnifying transmitters, will go through anything. What you do is that you set up a standing wave through the Earth, and the molten core of the Earth begins to feed that wave. We are talking Tesla now. When you have that standing wave, you have to set up a triode. What you've done is that the molten core of the Earth is feeding the energy, and it's like your signal that you are putting in, is gating the grid of the triode. Then what you do is that you change the frequency. If you change the frequency one way, start to dephase it, you dump the energy up in the atmosphere beyond the point on the other side of the Earth you focused upon. You start ionizing the air. You can change the weather flow patterns, jet streams, etc. You can change all that if you dump it gradually, real gradually. You influence the heck out of the weather. It's a great weather machine. If you dump it sharply, you don't get little ionization like that. You get flashes and fireballs, plasma, that will come down on the surfaces of the Earth. You can cause enormous weather changes over entire regions by playing that thing back and forth. So that's a little bit of a description from an expert physicist and engineer on how this kind of technology might harness natural energy in the Earth. And then, in fact, Tesla himself said that with this kind of technology, he could actually split the Earth in two. So we're talking about potentially technologies that are potentially much, much, much more destructive than nuclear weapons.
That's right.
Let me go ahead and say this is KHENLPFM Radio, 106.9 Salida, Colorado. And this evening on Truth Quest, we have Professor Dr. Eric Carlstrom and our special guests are Alfred Weber and Lorraine Moray. And we're speaking about all kinds of neat things that has to do with, not done neatly, but interesting things done with the earthquakes and weather modification and that sort. So, go ahead.
And you mentioned the interferometer. Bearden talks about those a lot. That is a part of the HARP antenna system. And they can be used for astronomy and astrophysics and different optical phenomena. You can use them for a lot of things because they're for studying waveforms. But you can also use them for seismology and also for subsurface investigation or subsurface exploration.
Yeah.
So
the
cover story is scientific research in big science and international collaboration on studying the universe, but the real application, just like nuclear weapons is, or nuclear weapons testing, they were detonated far more than needed to be, and the Russians did huge bomb tests, nuclear bomb tests in the Arctic. Well, what I finally figured out when I found a book on drift stations on ice flows in the Arctic is that the U.S. and the Soviets were secretly developing HARP and doing the necessary research work to define and understand the ionosphere together. And so they were pretend enemies busy developing HARP under the cover of the Cold War.
That's very interesting because, of course, I think we could recount just a little bit about Tesla's life, this genius from Serbia, what's now Serbia. And he came to this country at a young age and became one of the great inventors along with Thomas Edison, and many would say probably...
No. Thomas Edison stole his ideas, and who was the other one? Marconi stole his...
He's a tremendous inventor. Invented many.
He was
things.
Beyond he all of them. They were all stealing from him.
Yeah, but towards the end of his life, he I think died in 1942. The story is that he was trying to have a meeting with FDR in which he was going to reveal some of his high tech secrets, and he unfortunately supposedly committed suicide the night before the meeting, and. His papers were confiscated by the FBI and classified
for the Rockefellers.
So anyway, his stuff has been known for 100 years, but it's been classified. And the story is that I've picked up by reading books is that the Soviet Union went ahead and developed a lot of Tesla technology during the Cold War when the United States, it was pretty much a secret. And now you're telling us that the U.S. and the Soviets were actually collaborating on some of these experiments with Tesla technology. Is that right?
On yeah. all of it.
Yeah. Could I jump in here?
Yeah.
Yeah, good. I would like to segue here with, since we brought up the area of Tesla, with other secret applications aside from HARP, more in the area of quantum access to the time-space hologram that I've been working with over the past number of years with former participants in the secret DARPA projects that are based on Tesla technology, and coincidentally also starting tomorrow I'll be releasing the first of a 4-part article series on the application of secret quantum access technologies along with HARP technologies in the 9/11 false flag operation, which includes some of Lorraine Murray's work. And I wondered if, since we have been talking about Tesla, if I could bring some anecdotes and some of this research and a kind of preview of the articles that we've been rolling out, that we will be rolling out starting tomorrow. This is research that has not gone into the mainstream yet.
Yeah, sure. As long as we could get back to Haiti.
This would take us far afield then. So let's go back to Haiti. And perhaps on some other occasion, we can talk about Tesla.
Yeah, I think that would be great.
Okay, good.
The HARP lights, were they not reported in Haiti? Okay, I'll tell you what I've heard, and you can corroborate and tell me I've heard correctly or not. What I've heard as circumstantial evidence that the Haiti earthquake was not natural are three little tidbits, and tell me if you can corroborate this. I heard that Haiti had not cooperated and voted as it was supposed to at the Copenhagen Climate Change Treaty in December of 2009. I heard that the U.S. Army was pre-positioned to handle emergencies in Haiti in Port-au-Prince the day before the earthquake hit. And let's see. I heard one more thing that was related to that. That the HARP facility itself would not release the record of their activity on the day of the earthquake in Haiti. Have you heard those things? I mean, those are the sorts of things one reads on the internet.
They're all true.
They're all true. Okay.
Yes.
So that those are all pretty strong circumstantial evidence items that would suggest that this particular earthquake was man-caused and was caused by HARP technology,
Hugo Chavez and the Russian military said that it was done by the U.S. military.
Yeah, Chavez called it an earthquake machine, said it was a drill for a man-made earthquake in Iran.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's the case or not. But
it is.
What about the HARP lights? Were HARP lights seen at Haiti?
I don't know. I'm trying to get in touch with a Haitian who would be able to provide that information. But I don't want to get it off, you know, YouTube or a blog on the internet or something. I wanted to get it from Haitians who observed it.
Okay, now what about the earthquake in Chile? That, of course, was a deeper one. It's on a subduction zone. This was the site of the largest earthquake in recorded history in 1960, a 9.5. This one, an 8.8, is a monstrous earthquake, tremendous power release. What is the evidence, what suggests to you that that is a man-caused rather than a natural earthquake?
Well, when you look at the Caribbean tectonic setting, the timing of the earthquake, The fact that Eurasian Mining Company bought the mineral rights in 2 to 3 years ago, and so they were positioned, they had what they wanted, and just the people, the Haitians, were in the way, who refused to allow mining and theft of their mineral resources. Another thing that occurred was I found the proposal by the Eurasian Mining Company to a branch of the World Bank. They submitted it December 8, 2009, and the board of directors for the International Bank branch met on January the 11th, 2010, to consider the proposal requesting funds for the mining project by Eurasian Mining Company, and the earthquake occurred on the 12th. The board of directors had not voted to fund the project on the 11th. They met on January 13th, and they voted to fund the Eurasian Mining Company project, mining projects in Haiti, the very next day.
Also, Eric, with regard to data, with regard to the HAARP lights, we have linked at my website, exopolitics.com. There are YouTube, both of HAARP lights, both prior to the Haiti earthquake, and these are a whole number of...
well, those are anecdotal. There's no proof that they're anything.
Can I just talk here a second, please? They're both... for the Haiti and for the Chile earthquakes, you have lights. You have YouTubes of lights, and there's a very accomplished researcher in Chile. He does all of his stuff in Spanish, and we have linked to his YouTubes in which he shows a number of the lights prior to the earthquakes, and it's, you know, you have to speak Spanish to understand it, but he goes on at length as to why the Chilean earthquake, he's based in Chile, as to why the Chilean earthquake is HAARP caused, and one of the causes that he lists and he shows are the lights around the earthquake. So we have that documented at exopolitics.com. Now, one of the other aspects that I'd like to mention is this, and that is the type of civilization warfare which we think is going on. If you look at two of the more significant earthquakes, one is the December 26th, Boxing Day, 2004, Indonesia, tsunami, which a number of authors have indicated is probably HAARP caused, and also another December 26th earthquake, which was in Bam, Iran, which was a particular, which is a holy city in Iran. Both of those are there's a tremendous coincidence that both of those are seismic attacks on Islamic held sites one of which resulted in a quarter of a million deaths, in the largest Islamic country in the world with large petroleum deposits, and the other, in Iran, which has large petroleum deposits and which has been made sort of the enemy du jour of the permanent war economy. Both of those were triggered on Boxing Day, December 26th, the day after the High Holy Day of the Christians. So it's this theme of the Christian, manipulating the Christian culture versus the Islamic culture. And
I'd like to make a correction, Alfred.
Yeah.
Bomb is not a holy city. Bomb was one of the major oases on the Silk Route in Iran. And it had 1,000-year-old architecture. It was like a museum, a representation of architecture and lifestyle at that time. And so that would be a sort of an economic hit. And also, it was reported to me that Halliburton and Dick Cheney were in Bomb before that earthquake, just before that earthquake happened.
Yeah, the point that I'm trying to make is that as a correspondent with Press TV, which is the Iranian government press agency, where I was on there last week talking about 9/11, is that BAM is held as a city that has deep cultural significance to Iran, and it was attacked the day after the Christian holiday, the same day after the Christian holiday that Indonesia was struck in a strike in which a quarter of a million people were killed. And it's this manipulation of religious and of religion and culture that is also part of the equation. It's part of the equation of the permanent war economy.
It's a very major part of it.
Yeah. So,
well, it's a good point.
Yeah,
it seems that. Go ahead.
Yeah. So this is a very rich tapestry, and one which has to be examined very carefully. HAARP is a predicted weapon, and it's been predicted for many centuries by seers, allegedly by Nostradamus. I've done a whole study on this. I have a book on the internet entitled Earth Changes, which is an updated version of my original book called The Age of Cataclysm, published by G.P. Putnam's in 1973, which was the first book to integrate the modern earth sciences, geology and seismology, with parapsychology and precognition. And I updated that book in 1998 and put it on the internet as a free book. And in part of the update, I went into a number of the other sort of people who had precognitive abilities like Nostradamus and have whole chapters there in which supposedly, objectively, the era of HAARP warfare that we are now experiencing was fairly well set out. And this is a book that went online in 1998. And Nostradamus, of course, was several centuries ago. So we're dealing with a very significant development warfare that has been, that the Illuminati have been aware of, because they are aware of this whole multidimensional aspect of things for at least 200 or 300 years.
Well, okay, so
could I finish? I'd like to finish what I was trying to say. I got interrupted.
Go ahead.
Did you want to say something before I continue?
Well, the point that I was wanting to make is that obviously this weapon has the tremendous advantage of plausible deniability, because the obvious conclusion that most people come to, and the one that the press, of course, puts forward, is that these are natural phenomena. So I think our problem then, as in the kind of study we're undertaking to do here, is to try to identify what the characteristics are of man-caused, so we say, environmental warfare, and to show how that is different from natural phenomena. And it was interesting your point about the timing of Boxer Day, et cetera. Boxer Day, this whole thing could be kind of put under the realm of fingerprints, shall we say, of man-caused environmental warfare.
Could I continue?
Just to add to what Eric just said, to make our task even more difficult, NASA just came out with a story within the last week in which they redefined the causes of the May 12, 2008 China earthquake, which also had a HAARP profile, in such a way in which they've now incorporated the HAARP profile into the natural profile of earthquakes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So this is the latest development, and this is why it's going to be that much more difficult. This is a story which just surfaced within the last 5 days.
Could I continue?
Yeah. But I think that this is a very important point. And this is why it's going to make future identification of HAARP caused earthquakes even that much more difficult, because NASA has now come in and added an additional layer of disinformation.
There's still ways to do it, and I'd like to explain it.
Okay.
And what I was trying to do when I talked about the Caribbean tectonic setting was to establish the history of neocolonialism and colonialism. Neocolonialism is just colonialism in independent countries that used to be colonies, with the additional toy of HAARP to steal natural resources and cause other mayhem. And so there are certain characteristics that tip it off. The HAARP facility in the Caribbean is in Arecibo, Puerto Rico. We established natural resources in Haiti. The UN and the U.S. Department of Defense and NGOs were given access because of the earthquake disaster, and there are now 10,000 new NGOs in Haiti since the earthquake. It's more than any other country. And it's very obvious and very well known that the NGOs are working for the UN and the New World Order. International mining companies, international bankers, these are all part of the fingerprint of HAARP and neocolonialism. Now, you were asking about Chile, and so I wanted to start with Haiti, because what's happening in the tip of South America, the very southern area, is part of the geopolitical picture that's happening in the Caribbean and the northern half of South America.
Lauren?
And
could I just add one thing? When you were bringing up Puerto Rico on the HAARP facility, some of us have been tracking what's been going on there, and they've had a tremendous amount of activity. I believe it's quake activity in that area, which seemed to be kind of isolated. Were you aware of that?
I was not aware of that, but see, this is why we have to have discussions where we tease out the information from each other. We don't realize it's significant, but when you put the shared information together, you build a picture that wouldn't be possible otherwise. So that's the kind of information I've been looking for the Caribbean to confirm that the Haiti earthquake was HAARP triggered. Now, what happened just before the Chile earthquake is that it's in the Malvinas Islands area. The Falklands are part of the Malvinas Islands. And if you remember the Falklands War between Britain and Argentina in 1982, it was triggered by international geophysical exploration in the Falklands and Malvinas area. And the first scientists who were involved in the studies were South African, Israeli, and then when gas and oil deposits were confirmed in that area, then British scientists and entities took over the scientific study and the development of mining companies in the Falklands. There's something called the Falklands Gold Mining Company now. And I looked up the tectonic history of the Falklands and the Malvinas, and they were part of Gondwana land, which was a supercontinent where Antarctica is, that parts of all of the continents that we know today were all united in one supercontinent. And I know as a geologist that countries have been very, very interested in Antarctica for at least 40 years because it's two large continents that collided, and there are tremendous mineral resources there, especially since they can do radio tomography now from satellites anywhere on this planet. So a British oil company started drilling on about February 22nd, 2010. And 2 days before that came out in the news, Hugo Chavez announced suddenly out of the blue, I think it was on a Sunday, that the Queen of England should give the Falklands back to Argentina because colonialism is dead, and that land actually belongs to the Argentinian country. And I started thinking, and I said, my God, the British are using the Falklands to give themselves access to the mineral resources of Antarctica because they are physically and geologically, the Falklands are related to Antarctica. Now, the British couldn't claim land or access to Antarctica from the British Isles. It's not related at all. So then I realized that the Chile earthquake was related in timing or synchronicity. It happened about 5 days after the British started drilling the Falklands. There are very, very large copper deposits in Chile, the largest in the world, in the Atacama Desert in the north. There is a HAARP facility in the Atacama Desert. It's called the Atacama Large Millimeter Submillimeter Array, and it's three times bigger than HAARP, and it does have a very powerful interferometer, which, as I mentioned, is used for seismology and remote sensing. So there we have neocolonialism, HAARP, the economic deposits, and now in speaking in terms of synchronicity, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton made her began her South American tour on March the 1st, just 2 days after the Chile earthquake, and that had to have been planned a long time before. On March 11th, the new president of Chile was sworn in. He is Mr. Piñera. He's a tycoon. He's a billionaire, another one now in politics, and he's the first right-wing leader in Chile in 20 years. And right at the moment of his swearing in, there was a series of aftershocks, including a 7.2 aftershock, which is pretty significant. And I thought that was, that timing was very interesting. But then I began thinking more, and I realized that Argentina and Brazil have been building super giant nuclear-powered submarines for the British, and that the European and North American interests are not wanting to lose control of the Caribbean and northern South America, where indigenous leadership is making deals with China and Russia. And so I guess that the U.S. and the Europeans are very fearful of losing Argentina and Brazil and Chile. So they are, that would be giving them access to the Antarctic also. So I think there are major, major geopolitical battles and warfare going on over South America and Central America, including the Caribbean.
That's great. But going back to the Chile situation, I have a friend who's from Chile, and I talked to her after the earthquake, and she said they had a joke down there that every time they changed presidents, there was an earthquake. This was before the aftershock that occurred, as you say, right when the new president is being sworn in. So one wonders whether that there's something behind that that is more than just coincidence, especially the last two, perhaps even before that. You don't know.
Well, that's part of, that's called a ha-ha. It's part of the whole Masonic ethos, and the Masons and the whole Masonic organization globally is part of this this global permanent war crimes racketeering apparatus. And the Masonics, the Masons, were actually started by the City of London bankers in the 1700s, 1600s.
Yeah. Now, I'm just thinking that the one prophecy of the 2001 FEMA report, which said that there was going to be a false flag operation attack, that there was going to be a terrorist attack in New York, a hurricane in New Orleans, and a devastating earthquake on the West Coast. That is it's that last event which has not yet occurred.
But they've been practicing.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that. You have talked to Rosalind Peterson of California Skywatch, who has reported on the Navy's five-year plan for war exercises off the west coast of the United States, where we have a subduction zone going from northern Vancouver Island down to northern California along the west coast of the United States, such that we could have earthquakes just as large as those Chilean earthquakes. And yet the Navy is planning to use sonar, bombs, and even maybe electromagnetic radiation in their war exercises. Is this not potentially, are all these not potential triggers for a large earthquake?
Absolutely. Absolutely. FEMA's already said they're going to do it. And foreshadowing is one of the very strong aspects of the HAARP events.
Who has said they're going to do it?
Sorry.
Loren, you said somebody said they were going to do it. Who are you referring to?
Well, the FEMA prediction in New York City on September 10th included an earthquake disaster on the West Coast.
Okay. So this
now,
well could be true.
Yeah. Now, one of the, just to give you an anecdotal report from here, from Vancouver, B.C., Loren and I, because of our investigative series, which included the Myanmar cyclone of May 2nd, 2008, and the May 12th, 2008 China earthquake, that China earthquake preceded the Olympics, the China Olympics, and there seems to be, or we posited that that Olympics, that part of the timing of the China earthquake was to was as an assault on China in advance of the Olympics at the collective level to keep sort of a peak planetary collective experience of oneness from occurring during the Olympics, so, sort of to dampen things down and to dampen down China's ambitions for planetary leadership.
It's part of the shock and awe.
Yeah, part of the shock and awe. Well, I just want to report from the anecdotal that we, of course, in February had the 2010 Winter Olympics here in Vancouver. And in early January, in all of the sort of analytical circles here, we were all wondering what was the false flag that was going to be associated with the Vancouver Winter Olympics was going to be. And anecdotally, as soon as the Haiti earthquake of January 12, 2010 occurred, I called Loren and I remarked that that was the false flag event associated with the 2010 Winter Olympics, which were going to open shortly thereafter here in Vancouver. And it was very interesting that the head of state of Canada, Michel Jean, is Haitian by birth. So, and she had a kind of a public breakdown, and it was as though it was an attack on Canada in a certain way, and there's a big Haitian population here. So there was, from a psychological and kind of a head of state point of view, the same connection in the May 12, 2008 China earthquake to the China Summer Beijing Olympics as there was in the January 12, 2010 Haiti earthquake and the Vancouver Canadian 2010 Winter Olympics.
So you're saying that we just need to be paying a lot of attention to subtle background incidents that are taking place with a lot of these major events.
Yes. It seems to me that the supranational executive and the command and control are operating at a level of psychological warfare and mind control sophistication which is extraordinary and which feeds into all of the mind control technology and computer programs that have been developed over the, with MK Ultra, with
Tavistock.
With Tavistock. I heard at the Nexus conference in Australia in 2005 a presentation by a former U.S. DoD scientist who described how he designed software to be broadcast by HARP into the minds of entire populations that were to be hit by the HAARP footprint.
Actually, Gordon MacDonald talked about it.
Yeah, yeah. And this guy was actually designing that software on a nuts and bolts basis. So that's why you have a planet which is narcotized, which is allowing all of their civil liberties to be eroded, which is allowing their wealth to be stolen, which is allowing their sovereignty to be destroyed bit by bit, because they are under a HAARP-induced stupor that is highly, highly sophisticated by automated mind control programs.
Yeah, but you also have the chemtrails and the various things that may be put in the atmosphere or in the water or in that might be a factor too. Correct?
Yeah. HAARP is a multi-component. It's a space-based, atmosphere-based, and land-based weapon system, and chemtrails are the atmosphere-based component of the HAARP weapon system, which is worldwide. There are multiple HAARP sites, not only Alaska and Pine Gap, Chile, Norway, Loren, why don't you list some of the HAARP sites for the audience?
Well, that's how I sort of caught on the Eurasian Mining Company homepage when I saw those first big five major projects, because I went, oh my God, there's a HAARP facility near Haiti in Puerto Rico. There's a HAARP facility, Tronzo in Norway, which is where they're going to be mining in northern Scandinavia. There's a HAARP facility on Cyprus right next to Turkey where they're going to be mining. There is a HAARP facility actually in Kyrgyzstan and also in Kazakhstan, which is where they'll be mining the Tian Shan mining belt that goes into China, huge amounts of gold. And then there's a HAARP facility in Australia, which is right next to Sumatra, where they had that big earthquake, and that was HAARP. Rosalie Bertel told me it was HAARP. So these HAARP facilities are just happen to be right where the mining projects are, and there's a HAARP facility in Antarctica.
I think that maybe some of our listeners might be... we've given them a lot of different threads here to try to put together, and one of the threads that I think might be problematic for some is that on the one hand, the people that are perpetrating this seem to be centered in Britain and British industry in the City of London, and yet the actual executors, you might say, of the operation seem to be the American military. Could you perhaps talk about the connection? Is this an alliance between Britain and America, or is it above and beyond even those two nation states?
Well, Puerto Rico and Alaska are U.S. Peru and Peru and Chile, those are international collaborations, those HAARP facilities. Tromso in Norway is British. Cyprus is British. Greenland is Russia. And then Russia has the largest HAARP facilities and transmitters in the world. And they were the very first to do over-the-horizon radar and mind control on the U.S. from Russia. So this is an international collaboration by the gangsters. And the ruling elite, the oligarchy, stand on two legs. The military is one leg and organized crime is the other. Otherwise, they would never be able to stay in power and in control.
So they know no particular national allegiance. Would you say that's the case? They don't have a particular allegiance to any country, or do they?
Oh, they have no allegiance to any country. If you read the book Dope Incorporated by Lyndon LaRouche's group, and I know he has a wild reputation, but this book was very well researched for the Labor Council of America. It took 8 years to write it. And if you read that, you will understand who the gangsters are, because it's the same people who ran the dope trade and opium and heroin since 1725. And it's people like Bertrand Russell. He was the Earl of something or other. He was a Scottish Earl. He was probably the most dangerous person in the world of the 20th century. When you actually read about him and his activities and his ties to Dope Incorporated, you will understand. You begin to understand who these people really are. Another one is the Duke of Devonshire. They have been multi-generationally involved in the heroin and opium and drug racket. Others are mostly Scottish lords who go back to the Knights Templars 1,000 years ago. And the Knights Templars were part of the Crusaders. The Knights Templars were humanists. In other words, they believed in equality for all and the right to self-determination, which the Haitians have been fighting so hard for 200 years. And this rogue group of Knights Templars believed in monarchism and that they had the right to rule, the divine right to rule over everybody in the world. And they have been very undercover, very low-key, but they became extremely dangerous because of the wealth they accumulated from the dope racket, which is bigger than ever now. And this book is fantastic because it exposes Hong Kong as their headquarters for Dope Incorporated, as well as Canada. And the Canada headquarters was the conduit for drugs from Hong Kong into the United States. Prohibition in Canada and the U.S. were set up to establish smuggling networks and organized crime to run the liquor racket, but Prohibition only lasted 3 years. Once they set up the distribution routes and the gangsters, they just flipped the switch and turned it into the dope trade. Now, it sounds so wild, but it's just exactly what is really happening. And the currency of the international drug racket, which is an economy 5 times bigger than the legitimate economy of this planet, the amount of money is tremendous. And in order to avoid tracking and tracing and fingerprints and serial numbers on currency, the currency of the dope racket is diamonds and gold. And diamonds and gold are what these mining projects are really about. And last year, Canada produced over 4 million carats in diamonds from the mining project that the same City of London mining companies have been carrying out in northern Canada.
You know, I'm kind of glad to hear you bring up the fact that it's the criminals, because they have a tendency to have us picking each other apart on anywhere from nationalities to race to you name it. But when it really comes down, if you get rid of all of the things that they've had us divided on, we'd still have the criminals. And until we start going after the criminals, then
we can't do anything.
Right.
And what I really liked about Dope Incorporated was it named the banks. It named the Queen of England. It named the lords and ladies. It named the banks in Hong Kong. And the distribution route all over the world for distributing opium and heroin and methamphetamines, the methamphetamines are produced, the biggest producer is Burma, Myanmar. I just went there. I went to Sri Lanka. I went to Malaysia. I spent 3 months there in October, November, and December because I wanted to see this. I went to the gem fields where they have been mining gemstones, which are the currency, part of the underground currency, for 5,000 years. And when I came back, I started reading about Burma, and I discovered the whole international dope racket and LaRouche's book, and then everything started making sense to me. And the global distribution network is the overseas Chinese. These are the Chinese who do not live in mainland China. They're referred to as overseas Chinese by the mainland Chinese. Chiang Kai-shek and the Kuomintang, the government in China in World War II and before Mao took over, my grandfather was military attaché to Chiang Kai-shek's government, and Mao and Zhou Enlai made a secret agreement with Britain in World War II, and they shoved the U.S. out of having any control over China. The British agreed with Mao and Zhou Enlai set up and expand the international drug racket even more, and they just cut out the U.S. because Zhou Enlai said, we are going to use opium to take down and destroy the United States just like you, the British, and the Americans did it to us. So who were part of the drug racket that hundreds of years ago? John Kerry's mother's family.
What about the trafficking in humans? Was that involved in on that?
It's all part of it. Okay. It's all part of it, and organs, and it's all part of it. Anything that is illegal has tremendous profits.
So the black market is huge.
It's huge. It's five times bigger than the legitimate global economy. And the money is stolen and stripped every generation from the global population through wars and disasters and whatever. The mortgage crisis, that was one of them. And that money disappears. It goes into offshore tax havens. And these are island nations that were former British colonies. The Queen of England owns 52% of the offshore banking tax havens.
So if we survive this thing through the eugenics program, that they'll just come back again and again to strip those next generation after generation of their funds, like they have gone back to Argentina to keep wrecking their
economy.
Melody,
that's right. But the reason they get away with it every generation is because it's all been hidden. Nobody knew what was happening. But once I read that Dope Incorporated, and I've been to 50 countries, now I understand what I saw. Now I know what I saw. It makes sense now. And the whole HAARP apparatus is just part of the way they do their land grabs and their resource grabs, and they disable the populations in weaker countries, and they never even know. It's a heist, a stick-up. They think it's a hurricane or an earthquake disaster.
Well, if I could get back to that FEMA prediction that there were going to be these three big disasters, which we've had two, we've had 9-1-1, and we've had Katrina, and now we may be looking, if the script is going to be fulfilled, at a mega earthquake, perhaps along the Cascadia subduction zone, somewhere between Northern California and Vancouver. Where the conditions are right, and they haven't had a big earthquake there for, I think, 300 years. so probably the geophysical conditions are right. But would it be
The Hayward Fault in the Bay Area is the most overdue and the most dangerous earthquake zone in the United States. And the Bay Area is the most liberal, most activist center in the U.S. They're going to kill all the activists. That's what they want to do.
Okay, so, but my question involves, if this prediction was made by FEMA, can we assume then, or can we infer, that in these three events, and we've talked a little bit about 9-1-1, not much, that in all of those three events, 9-1-1, Katrina, and a possible potential future earthquake, that there is going to be some kind of Harper-directed energy type Tesla technology involved.
Oh, 9/11 was definitely, absolutely HARP was used, and Tesla technology, directed energy weapons are what vaporized the World Trade Center buildings. That dust was in lower orbital space in 24 hours, and I saw photos from the space station of that dust in orbital space. My PhD was on atmospheric dust. I've never heard of that happening, ever. Even from volcanoes.
Okay, so by the time this FEMA statement was written prior to 9/11, the criminals, the ruling elite, the guys who write the scripts here, had the technology of directed energy weapons, Tesla technology, had a plan, and that plan would seem to involve the taking down of the United States.
Well, that was planned 50 years ago. That was the Northwoods project.
Operation Northwoods?
Yeah,
Operation Northwoods. They planned it 50 years ago. They planned these things 50 years ago. They had a meeting of members of the 150 ruling families in the United States in Marin County in the 60s. Everything they planned has happened.
So one of the things,
Vietnam, Iraq, all of that, they plan all of it 50 years before.
So one of the things that we need to be bringing a lot more light to is all these meetings and that these groups go through, because what they're doing is planning our next future, and it doesn't
they're planning. What they want to do is to completely gain fully submissive global population. They are weeding they're cleaning out or eliminating the intellectuals, the change agents in the society. They are killing 150,000 people a year in England, and Asian societies did it 2,000 years ago. Japan did it 1,000 years ago. China did it 50 years ago. That's what Mao was about. And so they're just taking out the people who can resist this stuff and leaving just a submissive, dumbed-down, physically or mentally incapacitated population that they can completely control. And the earthquake in Haiti was timed in the late afternoon when everybody was still at work, and what they did was they killed the entire young, educated, trained generation that would take over Haiti in the future. They have wiped out that whole educated and trained generation. And that is what they're doing. They're targeting the young in every country in different ways.
Then, say, like your vaccination programs that are being taken on around the world are part of that operation.
That's right.
Okay,
and every mother and father should say, no shots. No shots. No shots. Children don't need vaccinations. If they eat healthy food and they're cared for well by their parents, they are completely resistant to disease. Indigenous children living on indigenous diets never had disease, and they never had vaccinations.
So how would you recommend Lorraine, that I suppose to fight back, the first thing to do is to get informed, and then to try to, and then what? Then what?
Well, if we organize into hierarchical opposition, they can attack that and destroy it. And what I think is the best plan, because it's what I've been doing for 10 years, is to create the information. There's nothing more powerful than good information, and the whole planet is starved for it. And so it's to give that information to the planet, to the universe, and let it come down like fairy dust all over the planet. People find their own ways to make use of it, and you don't want to interfere with their own process of discovering how to fight back. And it's like insect swarming. It's why Haiti got their independence, and it's why they've kept it. It's because no one could tame them.
Well, one of the other things before we come to a close here is, now the Dominican Republic didn't seem to get damaged that much, and with somewhere like Haiti, you're talking about the mining, but there also could be a quite a development area for beachfront property and things of that sort in the Caribbean.
Oh, there's a UN report that came out, I think, in 2008. It just came out, and it lays out exactly what they've been paving the road for 40 years, and who gets what. Canada and the U.S. get sweatshop labor and producing garments in Haiti, which they can then compete with Bangladesh and India and other third world countries and sell those countries' work shirts and work clothes in third world countries cheaper than the third world countries can make them for themselves. So the U.S. and Canada they're going to get sweatshops. And the international bankers and financiers at Rockefeller's Wall Street and London, City of London, are going to get trillions of dollars in gold and silver and copper and zinc and other minerals. And then the beach resorts and tourism and U.S. corporations, agricultural corporations, will take over the agriculture. Actually, they already have.
And one other thing is I'd want to bring up, because I am very curious about what you were fixing to come out with, Alfred, and I also would like to have you two back, if possible, to get further into the directed energy technology, because there isn't a lot out there talking about this in a fashion that it's being incorporated into a strong possibility or probability of what took place on 9/11.
Well, it's in all the cop toys. The military turned over this directed energy and exotic weapons and low frequency technology to non-lethal weapons is what they call them, but they turned them over to law enforcement in the U.S. at a classified meeting with Edward Teller and Janet Reno at Johns Hopkins University in the Applied Physics.
Well, it looks like the call got dropped here, so we'll just probably have to call it an evening, and then I'll have to just get back with them. Sorry, but again, we'll try to have Alfred and Loren back. So coming up next is music. And this is KHEN LPFM Radio 106.9 Salida, Colorado.